Good morning and welcome to this episode of Full Press Raiders Podcast. There's a lot going on and off the field. To break some of this down, one of my favorites, you read his work all over Full Press Raiders, your friend of mine, Grant Richards. Good morning, Grant. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Just like you mentioned last night, got a little snow. Just good to be inside today.
Shit, that's some facts right there. Now, you watched the ESPN 30 for 30, right? About Al Davis and Pete Rozelle? What was your overarching or your first takeaway?
My first takeaway was I knew growing up that the NFL didn't really like the Raiders. But I never really knew the whole story. And so this was an incredible dive into why Raiders fans now kind of say, oh, the NFL hates us. And it kind of all dates back to Al Davis and Pete Rozelle. And so just all the confusion of suing and moving and then not moving. And it kind of dawned on me, and I'm really glad I got some of my friends out here to watch it, because no one really understands the disconnect between the Raiders and the NFL. And so I just thought it was a really great insight to kind of explain why the Raiders fans feel like this.
Now, going in, the first question I had, because I didn't see it, because like I mentioned off air, DirecTV hates me, so I'm going to have to watch it today. But going in, one of the things that I saw that kind of disturbed me was there was no input or consultation of Amy Trask. How did the directors and producers of this manage to work around her?
Yeah, they kind of centered everything on Al Davis. So if anything was kind of made, it was through Al or Pete Rozelle. I think they tried to kind of simplify things for people that may not have been around or paying attention back then, and they just tried to paint kind of everything as just Al versus Pete.
Now, when you look at Al and you look at his, what was the one thing about this that surprised you that you didn't know about Al Davis?
I knew that he was competitive and wanted to win, but I didn't know how much it actually drove this man. Like, it was impressive. It was the thing you saw maybe in the Jordan documentary last year, or just some of the best athletes have the same drive Al Davis did. And you obviously know Just Win Baby, all that he kind of put together, but just how badly he began to just kind of almost act out against Pete Rozelle just to say, hey, I can still win this. He goes to court a couple times, wins, and I mean, it was just a step of intensity where I knew he was intense, but I didn't know he was that intense.
One of the things that when I want to watch how Pete Rozelle, when I was a kid, like I said, he was a commissioner. He was the undeniable iron hand, but Al always seemed to get the better of him. And the other 30, well, at the time, the other owners, they seem, even to this day, where when the Raiders wanted to move to Carson, Bob McNair, the Texans owner, had something to say, but which was weird because the Texans weren't a thing when all this was going on, when Al and Pete were fighting. Like, Bob McNair wasn't even involved. He wasn't even a thought. How much of that animus to this day do you think plays down between Mark Davis and the remaining owners, or is it because Al was so different and Mark is the polar opposite of his father that he doesn't have to deal with such animosity?
I don't exactly want to spoil everything for you, but there is a brief little moment where they interview Mark Davis and they kind of say, so what have you learned from all this? And he brings up tending wounds or tending people with sugar instead of salt. And so he does admit that Mark admits that he is different from his father, and you can kind of tell, I mean, just from what we know about Mark Davis, is not the same drive. It definitely got things passed down from Al, but definitely not the same fighting mentality that Al Davis just went to war every single day and Mark Davis is kind of a more build relationships guy. Al Davis wanted to win, and Mark Davis kind of mentions his... He didn't really care about it being necessarily winning when the Raiders moved to Vegas. It was more of just getting something done and doing it.
See, that's the thing that kind of leads into the next bunch of questions. Do you think that Al Davis, from what you saw in the 30 for 30 and from what you know previous to that, that he would have put up with Gruden again?
As of this point with John Gruden, I think Al Davis kind of would have been at his wit's end. I mean, two great starts to the Raiders season in this year and last year. 6-3, 6-4, right there. I think Al would have loved that, obviously. But then I think 2 years in a row of just disappointing second halves would probably have either had Al firing John or letting him know he's very close to losing his job.
Would Al had even extend that contract offer to John?
As a kind of seeing how John got traded to the Bucks earlier, I don't think there would have been a second stint. I think that's still a confusing kind of thing for me that I was hoping they'd cover a little bit, was just the trading of John Gruden to the Buccaneers way back in the early 2000s, but I think there would have been better options than John Gruden at the time, but I think Mark Davis went with what was safe, what he knew, kind of the hometown face that we already have had. But I like to think that Al Davis probably would have gone in a different direction.
Now, when you look at, even when I saw the trailer, I haven't seen it yet, but when I saw the trailer, it angered me because I knew that this team would have, Al Davis would have blown up this team how many times? He would have shaken that roster free completely again. When you see fans mention the old school ways of the Raiders and they try to tie John Gruden to the illustrious history, do you think there's a certain amount of hypocrisy or falseness about that, considering that Al was all about winning and Gruden really hasn't won anything in the last 3 years?
Yeah, there's definitely that little step, and I think a lot of people relate John Gruden to the, not the wonder years, but the years of success and the good times, because he was around for our last Super Bowl run, even though he eventually got traded to the Bucks and then beat us in the Super Bowl. But throughout all of it, it was just kind of, let me rephrase that. John Gruden has that drive and that, you see that mentality and that fire that Al Davis definitely would have liked, but Al Davis is a basically no-nonsense guy. He wouldn't have put up with this for this long, and like I said before, wouldn't have even extended that offer. But yeah, it's just kind of weird because Gruden has that fire, and I think that's what people see in the previous years, was fiery, energetic coaches, or even Al Davis full of life back in the day. And John Gruden has been that goofy kind of, hey, let's get unique. But I don't know the connection between the Raiders' successful years and why people always want to rope John Gruden into that. He built the team that got to the Super Bowl, but then left before it was finished, and I think Al would have hated that.
And we kind of make that transition to the fan base. Is this the most toxic you've seen this fan base in your years as a Raiders fan?
I mean, growing up, I went to one Raider game, and I heard a decent amount of swear words that I hadn't heard before. I was probably about 10 at the time. But since then, it's kind of just gotten into the spiraling, almost bickering amongst fans on Twitter. It's been, I mean, when we're playing well, there's still levels of toxicity of, well, Derek Carr's still not it, or this or that. I mean, we're growing, we're progressively growing in the levels of toxicity that we see. And I would probably have to agree that this is by far the most toxic I've seen this fan base.
Because it seems like, I want to talk about Derek Carr for a little bit. It seems like there's a hive mentality around Derek Carr, and I don't see it. Like, why is there such devotion to a guy that's this far under 500, who's entering year 7, who hasn't played in the playoff game and has had one winning season? What am I missing?
I mean, as someone who is now living near Detroit, I kind of see the same thing with Matthew Stafford, where it was, he's put in the hours, he's tried, he's doing his best, and we give credit for that when it's not good enough. I think the whole thing of Derek Carr is just he's been here that long, he's shown signs of being better than he really is, and I don't know the hive mind. I just know that people want to keep him around, and other people think that's the dumbest thing in the world, and so that's just kind of been the divide. I mean, we saw in 2016 Derek Carr was top 3 MVP voting. I mean, and so I think a lot of fans cling to that, but as soon as you realize we're not really going to see that Derek Carr again, is kind of your first step to acceptance.
Because I watch, and I mean, fans, they really have this inflated view of a guy that, and I wrote this last year, and I meant it, and I still mean it now. Physically, there's nothing wrong with Derek Carr. Physically, he has all the tools that you want in a quarterback. He has athleticism to escape the pocket. He has a very strong arm. He is very accurate. He has what you seek in a quarterback. It's between the ears. It's always been between the ears. It's always been. And for him, it always seems as though his specific subset of fans think that you have to surround him with everything perfect. And you mentioned Matthew Stafford, and someone living in Michigan, you can attest to this. For years, he didn't have a running game. For years, he didn't have competent blocking. For years, he didn't have a defense. But yet, he managed to get this team to the playoffs, what, 3 times?
I believe it was 3 times.
When I look at Matthew Stafford, he has the mentality that I wish that Derek Carr had. For the simple example, the game against Cleveland. All of you have probably seen this clip. Late in the game, Stafford is trying to make time in the pocket, trying to extend the play. He gets absolutely destroyed after he lets the ball go. Separates his shoulder. Now, it's his left shoulder, his non-throwing. He tries to struggle to his feet. Cleveland mysteriously called a timeout, allowing him to come back in the game. Stafford is trying to get back in the game. They're telling him no. He says he thinks he can throw the ball. They let him back on the field. He throws a game-winning touchdown to Brandon Pettigrew, that's the name of the pass, and the Lions win. That play encapsulated what the Raiders fans should want from Derek Carr. The toughness. I'm not saying that playing quarterback is not tough, but let me rephrase it then, the grittiness. You want that type of sandpapery aggression where, I'll be honest, every year I'm tired of the same Derek Carr press conference where he's sitting there, he's upset, or he's pissed. This is the pissed off version of Carr. It's the same thing every year. Why not be pissed off in October, November, December when the game's on the line and there's a chance to make the playoffs? It just seems as though each year the Raiders add something more to him as far as compliments and talent, and it doesn't come through. When I look at the stands, I'll be honest, and I will plead guilty to this. I am the kind of person who will engage them, and I shouldn't, because I just want to know why they have such allegiance to this man.
Yeah, I mean, we saw back. I mean, I quote 2016 a lot in my articles or in my podcast or whatever I'm doing, because we saw things that we hadn't seen before. We saw him flipping over defenders to get to a first down. We saw that aggression that running blind mentality. And then when we don't get it, I think that's kind of the issue where it lies is we've seen him be better. We've seen Carr be better. And those, I really hope that a lot of his fans are clinging to that Derek Carr, because this Derek Carr, this 2020, 2021 Derek Carr is, I mean, we saw what we're getting. That's as much as we're going to get now. But back then, if they're still clinging to that idea that this super aggressive, fearless Derek Carr is still in there, then that's where we're going to have some problems.
Because people legitimately take it like they're upset. Like, they take any criticism, even pointed, dispassionate criticism, as personal. Like, Derek Carr is a family member, and they get really upset. And it's weird. It's kind of creepy.
It is. It's like you could just tweet, Derek Carr isn't that good of a quarterback, and you'll have people in your mentions saying, well, he did this, he did this, he's improving every year. And so, well, he's still not up there. I mean, the level of value people place on Carr is concerning, considering we're about to go into a whole new trade aspect where he could be traded for something this year. And if he's traded for what the league values him at, a lot of his supporters and diehard fans are going to be upset, saying, oh, we should have gotten more. When you have to look at it and see that Derek Carr's an 8-8 quarterback at best. I mean, we've had 1 year over 500, and obviously that was 2016, where we saw different Derek Carr that I would be cool with people clinging to, but that's not who he is. And we're just, Derek Carr's not as good as, I mean, I don't have to tell you, but he's not as good as he was. Yes, he had that MVP third in voting season, but that was his peak. And I don't see people, I don't understand the waiting for him to get back to that, because that's just not going to happen.
And there's a leadership aspect of the team with Carr when I look at the fact that it took a veteran on a one-year prove-it deal and Nelson Agholor to sit there and call his team out. And where was Carr? He's supposed to be the unquestioned voice in that locker room. Why are the Raiders also paid Jason Witten $4 million to be a locker room leader? There was no need to pay somebody, obviously, at the very dead-ass end of their career to come in and be a voice when your quarterback has been here just about longer than anyone except Gabe Jackson. You should already have that voice. Now, you mentioned his trade value. Right now, if you're the Raiders and, say, the Bears offer you a first this year, second this next year, and a first the following year for Derek Carr, do you take it?
As of right now, and that's a crazy offer. It's kind of right on the line of, well, I would also like to get a quarterback from somewhere, because the Raiders aren't in full blow-up mode where it's sell the, I mean, they might be. They can't get the defense figured out, but that's a whole other story. I mean, two firsts and a second for Derek Carr is kind of where I'd set the price. So if someone comes calling with that, I don't think the drop-off, I've mentioned this a few times, is the drop-off from Watson to Carr to Mariota, because that's our current backup right now, is probably worth those couple picks. I mean, I haven't loved what's been going on with the Raiders drafting as of late. I mean, we just haven't seen production from a lot of these guys, so I don't necessarily know if I want to trust a couple picks or if I'd go more in the route of assets, but that's kind of the line where it's like two firsts and a second for Carr is kind of what I would hope to be the bare minimum of what we get. But if I'm in charge, I mean, I'm making calls on defense, I'm making calls on other things, but realistically, it's probably time to let it go and rip that Band-Aid off. So to answer your question, yes, I'd probably pull the trigger on that.
Would you flip those two first-round picks add your own and send him to Houston for Deshaun Watson?
See, when you put it like that, it's so easy to understand that I probably would do that because, like I said, I don't necessarily trust our draft picks. And in this sense, when you don't trust the front office's picks, they kind of get overvalued. And so if we want to ship out one of our picks plus picks we just traded for Deshaun Watson, I'm kind of on board. I started off when all this Watson stuff started. I said, don't touch our draft picks. And then I kind of started looking in, and we haven't had much success from a lot of the guys the Raiders have drafted, especially in the first couple of rounds. I mean, you start getting into the third round, fourth round, you get Mo Hurst and Max Crosby, but really nothing from the guys we expected. So I would put less value on a Raiders draft pick than anybody else's pick. So to answer your question again, yes. I think adding one of our picks and those from the Bears, if that's what the Texans are looking for, I'd give them a call for sure.
Now, spinning that forward, we mentioned the Carr stands and the Carr fans. Do you think if he is traded, they will go with him?
I hope not. I mean, you come into this as a Raiders fan. You don't come in as a Carr fan. To be completely honest, I followed Shaq when I was a kid. I went from L.A. to Miami to Phoenix to wherever he ended up. I just loved Shaq. But Derek Carr's not Shaq. There are going to be more Derek Carrs. There's multiple in the league already. There's never going to be another Shaq. So the fans that really support Derek Carr, I can't see them following him because, frankly, and I don't mean, like, this is obviously impersonal, but he's just not that good of a quarterback for people to follow city to city. And as much as I'd keep in touch, not that I have a connection with him, but I would keep up with his stats and pay attention to what he's doing elsewhere. And sure, I'm rooting for him, but my loyalty lies in the silver and black.
Now, before we head out, where can people read your writing? Where can people interact with you on social media?
On social media is going to be Grant R. Richards on Twitter, and I have recently started up a little podcast for the Raiders and then for kind of the Detroit people that have also come to follow me on Twitter. That's going to be Grant Slants on either the podcast or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere where you listen to your podcasts.
I've seen the I'm not sure if you still are going to do the video streaming as you're doing the podcast, but it is, folks, it is quality. Grant has a nuanced, calm opinion that actually works. He's not a yelling, screaming type. He's not going to flip a table over and start punching interns. Well, he does live in Michigan, so I'm not sure if the punching interns thing is off the table yet. But
it is off the table.
Grant, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.